Wednesday at this time, Anna DeVlantis joins us for This Week in Chicago History. And first, we will remember the Mirage Tavern. Anna?
This is a good one, Bob. Good morning to you. The Chicago Sun-Times did something in the late 70s that you'll recall that at that time, no other newspaper or media outlet had ever done before. They bought a bar and they operated the business as a way to, as a front, basically, a sting operation. They were investigating corruption. So the Mirage Tavern was just that, a mirage for a legendary investigative news operation. And this week, 1978, Bob, the Sun-Times shocked the city when they began publishing their 25-part series. The corruption they uncovered was incredible. The photos they released, city inspectors accepting and requesting bribes, city permits and approvals being offered in exchange for cash, holdups. Basically, they'd hold up your approval if you didn't get the bribe. And then just how widespread the participation was in these massive city shakedowns. The Sun-Times said they knew the small business owners across the city were being targeted and shaken down by city inspectors. They just couldn't prove it. They couldn't get anybody to go on the record and tell them about that, and you can imagine why that is. But so they took this unorthodox approach, secretly buying a bar under an alias and then running it like a sting operation. They had hidden cameras, and when they released the story, they had all these photos of these white envelopes being passed back and forth. And it was liquor inspectors, building inspectors, health inspectors, you name it. They had their hands out, and they proved it. So interesting that the photos they captured of these the white envelopes became the talk of town in the late 70s. We pulled a clip here. A WTTW interview with Zay Smith and Pam Zekman, who poses a couple operating the bar at that time. They said everyone up to the mayor would deny anything like this was going on until they proved it. Here's that interview.
731 North Wells in River North, the Mirage Tavern. It's just a mirage.
Incredible they got away with it, though, too, without anybody knowing, Bob, until they, revealed.
That was really something. A little Bears history this week in 1988. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see much. Nobody could.
That is epic. I know you're dealing with a little fog there today, but it feels as if you go back to the fog ball, Soldier Field, it's the greatest game no one ever saw. This blanket of fog, just still to this day, Bob, ranks in the top five wackiest weather games in NFL history. And the beginning part, as I recall, and back me up on this, was pretty clear, like the first half.
Yeah.
Clear skies. And then around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, this fog, this blanket of fog rolled in. No one predicted it. Someone thought that they opened a fog machine. Fans, they were like, what's going on? Huge game, too. The NFC divisional playoff game. Bears Eagles, Ditka versus Buddy Ryan. A big rivalry. Everybody there had pride on the line. And the problem was that you just couldn't see the middle of the field. Players said they couldn't see their quarterback. Quarterbacks couldn't see their receivers. Ditka said he couldn't see the players. Total mess on the field. And even the guys in the broadcast booth, that was the funnest part, calling the game for CBS. They didn't know who was completing passes. They were above the fog. It was impossible to see anything. Just kind of comical going back and listening to them trying to call the game. Here are some memories here from the Fog Bowl. Coach Mike Ditka, Vern Lundquist, who was in the broadcast booth, and the late, great Steve McMichael.
Miss Steve McMichael. And if you were not on the lakefront, you wondered, wait a minute, what's going on? Because it was only on the lakefront, wasn't it?
That was the weird part, Bob, that it just kind of blanketed that one distinct area of the Bears Stadium area of the city. And people watching the game on TV across the city were like, is there something wrong with my reception? Why can't I see the game? And it, sure enough, there was just nothing you could do about it. It was there for the entire rest of that game. Bears beat the Eagles, by the way, as you might recall from being there 20-12. So we just don't know how they did it, but they did it.
More This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis coming up. One of the great songs to come out of Chicago. Anna?
Chicago musician Skip Haines says he and his bandmates started recording that song December 31st, 1971, finished it New Year's Day, 1972. He decided to compose it after a long late night drive back from the clubs along the lakefront. And he said that it was interesting to think about how it tied so much of the Chicago experience together, this one road along the lakefront. Initially, he released it on the B-side of his 45 record with Snow Queen on the A-side. Well, it got a lot more radio play than Snow Queen, as local FM DJs just discovered it and really loved it, kind of turning it into an unofficial anthem for the city. The song was then re-released on the title track of their follow-up album, Lakeshore Drive in 73. Skip Haines was a Northsider, and he said he went downtown to get into trouble and hang out at the Russian Division Street bars and the area nightclubs. And in the song, he talks about starting north from Hollywood and taking the drive to the Gold Coast. And we pulled this clip of Skip Haines himself driving along the Lakeshore Drive while giving an interview, describing in more color about how he came up with this iconic song and what happened.
Came out in January of 1972. Great song.
What a story. Yeah.
And nothing like having that play in your car when you're on the drive. That's still the best.
It's the best.
This was quite a week for Oprah in 1984, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this was it, the week it all started for Oprah. She debuted as host of the then lowly rated local morning show, AM Chicago, on January 2nd, 1984, Bob. She'd come here from Baltimore, as we all know. She's a news anchor, show host, and quickly took AM Chicago from last place to the top rated spot in the city. Almost as quickly, the show was renamed for her. And then within 20 months, it went into national syndication. So we pulled two clips from the Wayback Oprah time machine, you might say, the first Oprah on WTTW shortly after her arrival in town, just talking about how much she just loves this city. She loves Chicago. The second clip, Oprah on David Letterman, at a time when the nation was still trying to figure out how to say her name.
Yep, brings back memories of me attending an Oprah Christmas party for her show, and I guess I wasn't supposed to be there. And
was it the launch for her show?
No, it wasn't the launch. She had a Christmas party every year, and it was a big bash. I forget where it was, but they had she had the OJs there, and I was friends with one of the producers, and she invited me to go to the party. And then later, apparently, there was a big dust-up because outsiders weren't supposed to be there. So I put on my resume, feud with Oprah, because it's very impressive to say that. You know what I mean?
You almost got kicked out of Oprah's party. That would have been a great story, Bob.
That's right. You know what? You say cuddly Dudley around here, and people get very emotional, don't they?
It is so true. It is just like this was the golden age of television for Chicago kids. And no doubt Ray Rayner was the start of it all. He began his show and Cuddly Dudley became on his show one of the most beloved characters in local television history, remembered by generations of Chicagoans. This week, 1981, Bob, Cuddly Dudley made his final appearance on Ray Rayner's show, sadly, as Ray Rayner himself shortly signed off shortly after that, retiring after a decades-long, super successful career. But for those too young to know anything about Cuddly Dudley, Ray Rayner would begin the final segment of every show by singing the Cuddly Dudley song, signaling that Cuddly Dudley was going to come out of the doghouse and chat with Ray, making some silly jokes and sharing local kids' letters and artwork sometimes. It's interesting. We pull a clip here for those old enough to remember, see if this brings back any memories. The song that you would hear when it was time for Cuddly Dudley.
It just makes you want to put Post-it notes all over my shirt today.
Bob, be honest, can you recite the whole song? If you were, you know, come on, if you were taking a test, could you do that? No?
No, I can't. I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention.
You were too excited about the artwork coming up, right?
As long as we're doing a little TV history, we have an extra minute here. Do you want to give a shout out to anybody who once worked at CLTV?
CLTV, this is the anniversary when it all started, January 1st, 1993. Bold experiment from the Tribune to start a 24-hour news channel, Bob. But back then, CNN was just like rocking with the pre-internet demand for around-the-clock news. And CLTV said, let's do something locally, drawing on all the local Tribune partnerships with Tribune reporters and columnists, beat writers, WGN-TV and WGN Radio. And it was really a cool thing. Do we have time for the clip real quick of the promo boasting? What happened?
No, I don't think, okay. I don't think we have time for the clip.
Basically, what they were saying in the clip is that 1.8 million households across the region were relying on it at the height, I should say. So a pretty cool rise for CLTV. Then, of course, digital media kind of increased our options for getting news, but lasted for a long time until 2019.
Yeah, I lived in the traffic cave for CLTV.
Oh, Amanda.
On and off since 2003. Yep.
Well, I love it. Mm-hmm. We have a cuddly Dudley for you, Amanda.
Oh, thank you.
Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. More next week. Thanks, Anna. You have a good one.